had a TDA backdrop, and anyway, I don't know. Did you hear what happened to Hincus?
Bye. Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's weekly look at the Capitol and politics, and there is a lot of politics. J.R., last Monday, it was a very simple order. The U.S. Supreme Court issued a long list of cases that they were not taking. And no explanation, but one of them, they will not reconsider, they will not revive the plea of three Wisconsin district attorneys to revive John Doe 2. Let me just read the reaction first of Governor Walker. I applaud the individuals and organizations who fought for and successfully defended their First Amendment rights against political opponents who wanted to silence them. That was the governor. And then the three DAs from Milwaukee, Dane, and Iowa counties. Two sentences. The state Supreme Court decision, left intact by today's U.S. Supreme Court order, prohibits Wisconsin citizens from enacting laws requiring the full disclosure of disguised contributions to a candidate. And then this next sentence, Chair. We look forward to the day when Wisconsin adopts a more enlightened view of the need for transparency in campaign finance. But this is a U.S. Supreme Court decision, not a surprise, right?
No, I mean, one, the Supreme Court takes so few cases that are sent their way anyway, so that was it. And then two, the heart of this appeal, essentially, was that two members of the Supreme Court, Justice Gable, shouldn't have heard the case because they received support from the conservative groups now at the heart of John Doe 2.
They're being investigated by John Doe 2.
And then, too, that this is kind of a unique situation in Wisconsin where we have a state Supreme Court saying you can coordinate on issue advocacy. Remember now, express advocacy is saying vote for Steve or vote against Steve. Issue advocacy is saying, okay, Representative John Doe, you can go talk to an outside group and say, hey, I'm going to run on, I think taxes are a big deal this fall.
Yeah.
Why don't you run ads about tax? Talk about cutting taxes. So
yeah,
there's a difference.
Yeah.
But that's allowed now. We're kind of unique in that way. But even if they'd revived the investigation or said, okay, go back to the Supreme Court, then what?
Right.
Supreme Court's still 5-2, conservative majority. Laws change. What could they have done, these district attorneys, if they had revived John Doe 2 and said, okay, now go back and try again?
We don't know how the U.S. Supreme Court split on this issue. We don't know if they went 4-4. There was just a simple order. We hereby, the U.S. Supreme Court will not hear this plea from our DAs. Now let's talk about the legacy of John Doe 2, J.R. I think it fundamentally changed Wisconsin politics. Do you agree?
Oh, yeah, many ways.
Well, one way, the perceived anti-Walker bias by the Government Accountability Board led Walker and GOP legislators to abolish GAB. Any PSs on that one?
That actually is one of like many grievances Republicans have the GAB. Go back actually to the first recall elections, 2011.
Yeah.
That's where some of the trouble really began.
Now, they wanted them held on the same day.
To be honest, there are critics from both sides of the aisle when it came to the GAB. But Republicans became incensed after that first decision of Republicans will go first, Democrats a week later. They thought that was unfair. And then it just kind of snowballed from there.
Yeah. Okay. And another legacy of the John Doe 2. Walker and Republican legislators narrowed the John Doe law, saying it can no longer be used to investigate campaign finance violations.
Yes.
A major change. We had had that John Doe law for more than a century. That's another major legacy.
So you can go then and do a grand jury if you wanted to, for example. We don't really use those in Wisconsin. There are still John Doe investigations for other crimes, but they've also narrowed things like new requirements on how often you have to go back to the judge to get authorization to continue the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that, so it's really overhauled
the amount
the process.
Spent has to be disclosed.
Completely overhauled the process.
Completely, and narrowed the John Doe process. So that's legacy number two. Number three, John Doe 2 played a role in our new campaign finance code that resulted in now, for the first time, legalizing corporate donations.
And coordination, that's now codified in state law.
Right.
Now, so far I've asked, nobody's owning up to coordinating so far, but that is allowed if you want to do it.
Right. And as you just said, the state Supreme Court shut down John Doe 2, which was appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, which the U.S. Supreme Court didn't hear, and ruled that the candidates can coordinate, as you said, with third-party groups. So we have changed Wisconsin politics profoundly. But one of the things that I find ironic, the leaked Guardian documents document Scott Walker's fundraising on behalf of Club for Growth in the window of 2011-2012. J.R., is it wrong to say that our state Supreme Court ruling didn't come out until 2015. Mm-hmm. So was the governor fundraising in a gray area in that period?
Well, Republicans will tell you that there have been so many court decisions in the federal courts and state courts that have made Wisconsin campaign finance law Swiss cheese, if you will,
right,
that there was a gray area. They felt like they were on solid ground. Now, few others have gone on that ground or had gone on that ground back in 2011 and 12 when he was doing it, but they obviously believed that they had law, the law on their side because of court cases that they were okay. I'm not sure other people viewed things that way, and there are still those who think there's a problem with what he did.
Well, okay, but let's talk about this. When you talk about court cases that gave the Republicans assurances that they were operating legally, you're talking about Judge Peterson out of Eau Claire, his ruling shutting down?
No, other court cases.
John Doe,
we've had all kinds of federal court cases.
The federal RANDA ruling?
All kinds of court cases that have preceded even this stuff that have knocked down and this bill that allowed coordination on issue advocacy, that raised the contribution limits, that all these other allowed corporate money. They're a reflection of this series of court cases going back to the mid-aughts, if you will. So that's been going on for a while. There are issues there with Wisconsin's campaign finance law. And I think I get the impression Republicans felt like, hey, we weren't doing anything wrong. This is free expression. This is First Amendment rights to mm-hmm. us. Mm-hmm. We felt like we were on solid ground doing this.
The door opened by Citizens United, we kind of walked through it. Mm-hmm. One takeaway question on this issue. Do you think voters care at John Doe 2 and how it fundamentally and profoundly changed Wisconsin politics, JR?
Well, go back and look at the election results. John Doe 1 was hanging over Walker's head when he ran in the recall in 2012. Didn't seem to be a problem then. John Doe 2, we knew about it during 2014. He won by, what, 5, 6, 7 points? So the voters haven't held it against Walker to this point. Now, those who dislike Scott Walker, it's only infuriated them that much more. But as far as being a definitive issue in the campaign, we haven't seen evidence of it yet.
Well, and you and I read the Peter Barca, the Democratic Assembly Leader, press release that this may not be over. But John Doe 2 is over. Supreme Court drove mm-hmm. a stake through it, didn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Now let's turn to the Wisconsin voter ID law. A federal judge has now ordered an October 12 hearing after the group VoteRider documented recorded DMV employees giving misinformation or incomplete information on how to get an ID. Big deal?
Yes. We kind of talked about this before where when Republicans passed this law in 2011, I believe, they went for what they felt was the strictest law they could get through the courts. They felt like they were on solid ground because they gave out free IDs. They talked about how this is going to prevent voter fraud. The problem is they went beyond what Indiana's law did,
right,
which had been approved by the Supreme Court, and that law created an affidavit process that if you don't have an ID, you can say, I am so-and-so, and there's this kind of outlet, if you will, safety valve. Because we didn't have that safety valve, we have gone through numerous court hearings, this revision of the appeal, a new appeal process to get a free ID,
right,
and the whole nine yards because we went for the stricter law. It's created a problem, and it's interesting is that this appeal process was created in some ways by the state Supreme Court. When it upheld the voter ID law, it said, okay, the law is good.
Here are the remedies.
But you have
a,
to
B,
fix
C.
this.
Yeah.
You have to fix this because people who don't have a birth certificate, for example, you can't require them to pay a $20 fee or whatever it is, get a copy of the birth certificate, and then go get the ID, the free ID. You have to make sure the front end there's no cost either. So they create this process, and now it's become the bog, if you will, on voter ID. We've had it. We spent more time in a courtroom with voter ID than we have in the voting booth, right? So now what? We have the ACLU saying overturn the law. We have
One Wisconsin
Institute with a hearing next week.
And the issue, what they're asking for, is suspending the photo ID requirement for November 8 election.
And they're citing this appeal process again, where what's supposed to happen is you go in there with what you have and say, I don't have my birth certificate or whatever you don't have. I need an ID to vote. They say, okay, we put you in the appeal process. You get this temporary receipt, which they brag that we will overnight you during the week ahead of the election, weeks ahead of the election. That'll ensure you can vote in November. But people are going in at Crimson Recordings and saying, I have this, this, and this, but I don't have my birth certificate. Well, you need that. Well, no, you don't. And now Mark Gottlieb, the DOT secretary, goes before this committee on Tuesday, I think it was.
Right. He says, this is obviously a somewhat complex process, so we're always looking to improve.
Yes. Put on the spot. And now the federal judge, Peterson, late last week said, okay, I've heard these reports of these recordings. You guys come back to me by today, at some point today, and tell me what's going on. We have that brief due today, and then on Wednesday is the hearing of, okay, what are we going to do now? And now Peterson, you know, here's the rub. We are less than a month out or almost a month out from the election. Would he really overturn voter ID and cause that much more, what are we going to do now kind of situation for voters? Remember, the U.S. Supreme Court back in 2014 The Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals came in September, I think it was, said, okay, voter ID is okay. Right. It's on the books.
Yes.
Supreme Court stepped in October, said, wait a second, we're too close to the election, and reversed them. Would there we have another situation where it's last-minute wrangling about what you don't need? The poll, it's a possibility for confusion. We've been running a public campaign through the now Elections and Ethics Commissions for the last, 6 weeks, saying you need it and bring it.
1 million postcards, that?
Yes. Yeah. Those things.
Okay, but what's the next step? What's the deadline for Department of Justice to file, it's not a brief anymore, but to file with the federal judge detailing the steps that they are doing to correct any DMV misinformation?
The report is due today. They had asked for an extension until Tuesday to address both the report plus the One Wisconsin Institute request. The judge said, no, I want it Friday. So we should see it sometime today. And then, interesting here on Wednesday.
5 o'clock or 5:30 or 6 o'clock?
Probably.
Yeah, probably. Okay, that's, anyway. Federal court hearing before Judge Peterson October 12th,
yes.
Right? Well, let's talk personalities. Let's talk about Charlie Sykes for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
He's decided at the end of this year he's no longer going to have the 8:30 to 12 slot on TMJ Radio in Milwaukee. He's been doing this for 23 years. How would you assess the force that Charlie Sykes has been?
Well, they call it the biggest stick in the state, right? WTMJ. I mean, he has been a driving force, and all their talk radio hosts in Milwaukee have as well, in Republican politics for two decades. He's been a big cheerleader for Governor Walker. He's helped push things like the Taxpayer Protection Amendment. Remember, he broadcast live from the Capitol 12, 14 years ago?
Yes.
You see...
And he helped Ron Johnson. Go ahead.
You see... Rebecca Clayfish, lieutenant governor, in part because Charlie Sykes was on her side in the primary. They have Milwaukee talk show hosts are a driving force in turnout for Republicans in Wisconsin politics, especially in primaries. They bang the drum. As one person told this week, it's like 8 hours of free advertising on Milwaukee radio anymore between Sykes and Belling and McKenna and Weber and Wagner. I mean, these guys are kind of part of the turn operation. Look at what's happening to Donald Trump in Wisconsin right now. His numbers aren't very good where? In southeastern Wisconsin. Part of the reason why is because you had Sykes and Belling and Weber back in the spring beating the Never Trump drum. Now, Belling is kind of more on board with Trump these days, but Sykes hasn't come on board.
No, he hasn't.
And you're seeing an effect, if you will, that shows you what a force they are. Now, the question kind of becomes, all right, so Sykes hangs it up in December. What now? So Wagner's going to slide up to this slot at 8:30.
Jeff Wagner, who's their afternoon talk show guy.
Ran for attorney general in
1994. And here's my trivia question. What percentage of the vote did Jeff Wagner get in 1994 as a Republican candidate for attorney general?
Against Jim Doyle? Not a very good one.
What's your guess?
40%.
46.3%.
There you go.
Okay, but here's a guy in Jeff Wagner who has put his name on the line, run to be the state's top cop. Charlie Sykes has never run for office.
No.
He's been more intellectual and more of an author.
And he laughed off the idea of running against Timmy Baldwin in 2018, which I thought was kind of an interesting rumor out there. But anyway, the question kind of becomes, okay, what's the impact of Sykes retiring? Will there be a void? The other side is that if you look at the conservative media operations been built in the last 5 to 10 years of Wisconsin, it's not just talk radio anymore. You have Right Wisconsin, which is Sykes' website. He's going to continue to edit that. Just a daily email every morning. You've got McIver Institute. You've got all these other kind of outlets popping up.
Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty.
All these organizations have popped up that are driving the message as well. Will they kind of fill the void? Will there also be a younger conservative voice who emerges from this, becomes the next Sykes in waiting, if you will? It's an interesting to see what's going to happen going forward. But there is no two ways about it. This guy leaves a void. When he retires, he leaves a void in conservative media in Wisconsin.
And let's talk about the statement that he made on... This is not a decision that I made either lightly or recently, and it was not driven by this year's political season. Not driven by this year's political season. I made this decision more than a year ago for both professional and very personal reasons. My question is, didn't the pushback that he's getting from many Wisconsin Republicans for never wavering on the never Trump stance... Didn't this make it easier for him to pull the plug?
He says it made it easier, but very interesting in his kind of announcement he's leaving. You know, his father was a journalist as well, died at 63, if I remember right.
Yep.
Sykes turned 62 this year.
Yep.
I mean, there's an obvious, I want to have my life, if you will, kind of aspect to this. And he said, I'm not going away. I just won't get up at 4:15 every day anymore to do it. So he's going to be an active voice in conservative media, but not the same presence he's had before. But absolutely, this environment, he says, has made it easier to walk away.
And he says the title of his next book may be How the Right Lost Its Mind, which is very intriguing.
Side note, there are plenty of people in Madison who watch this whole thing and go, you know, Charlie's really enjoyed, if you will, the attention he's gotten in the last few years because he's become like the go-to conservative to criticize Donald Trump. He's on MSNBC constantly. So that's that book will probably be part of that. He's expressed a regret, if you will, about how conservative media have torn down the, you know, mainstream media.
Yeah, by tearing down the mainstream media,
there's
the
no
lamestream
truth anymore.
Media, yeah. And the Journal Sentinel is that daily, what's he call it?
Deadwood or something like that.
Yeah, right. And he said, we have torn down the goalposts, and he's been a part of that. So he's obviously doing some professional reassessments. It's very intriguing. Can Jeff Wagner be the force that Charlie Sykes was, JR?
You know, give him some time, but the early idea is he's not the same personality. He's not the same kind of person behind the microphone. Will he have the same force? It's hard to see right now, but maybe he grows into it. You never know.
Well, and go back to when Charlie Sykes did get that phone call from Donald Trump and said, are you aware that I'm part of the Never Trump? I just have a wonder whether Jeff Wagner would have been as aggressive in that interview as Charlie Sykes was.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. Very interesting. Okay, let's talk about Battleground, Wisconsin. I mean,
yes. If
you go to any street corner almost, you're going to run into a candidate. Let's talk about the surrogates. Donald Trump Jr. was in Brookfield, and then he went to a gun shooting range in Marathon County. And what about, let's start with tomorrow. Paul Ryan, Speaker Ryan, is going to be on the same platform for the first time with Donald Trump.
And Ron Johnson.
And Ron Johnson.
Scott Walker.
And Scott Walker. But as you pointed out in this morning's report, wasn't that a wonderfully... The press release from Speaker Ryan referred to, oh yeah, Mr. Trump coming in, what, the third or fourth paragraph?
Yeah. What'll be interesting is I want to see if there's a picture of Donald Trump and Paul Ryan arm in arm.
Arms aloft for victory?
Yes.
Yes.
Ron Johnson next to him. I get the feeling that that's not going to happen tomorrow. But what you are seeing is that we've been talking about this for a while, that is Wisconsin really in play? And it kind of is, but kind of isn't.
I'm completely sold out to the idea that we are in play. Go ahead.
So there's a three-legged stool, right, for presidential campaigns in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Advertising. We've seen ads from a pro-Trump super PAC. We haven't seen Trump advertise here or Clinton. There's operation, you know, infrastructure. Donald Trump is relying on the state GOP. He's not building infrastructure. Hillary Clinton is, though. She's got an operation that's part of the, they call it the coordinated campaign for Democrats. They all work together. They have more offices in Wisconsin than the state GOP does. They've got an infrastructure here. And then there are visits. So we've got Trump here now twice in a little more than a week.
Yeah, 10 days, 10, 11 days.
Where's Hillary? And this is why I bring that up. It seems like I get a couple of theories about what's happening in Wisconsin. One of them is that Donald Trump's path to 270 electoral votes is not very wide. He needs to find new avenues. Wisconsin, you would think, look at us demographically. Who's he do best with? White males who are blue collar and lack a college degree. Well, we have lots of those in northern Wisconsin, western Wisconsin. They would seem like a natural constituency for him. So, okay, we may be a place, because he's doing well in Iowa, so why couldn't he do well here? That's one thought. So he's going here to come by no path to 270. Clinton, though, has a much broader path to 270 votes. She doesn't need Wisconsin necessarily. She needs Pennsylvania. Her bulwark, her kind of like firewall, is more of that's a state like that.
She's riding off Ohio, where Trump's up by 5 percentage points.
Not necessarily, though. Now we're seeing her numbers rebound. So the map is still gelling for it. She's got more past the 270. And there's a thought of, well, she needs a Pennsylvania, invest in Florida, invest in North Carolina. Just keep this one over here, Wisconsin, here for right now. Now, the question is, as the map coalesces in the last couple of weeks, do we see her come here? Do we see, now Bill Clinton's coming to Milwaukee on Saturday.
On Saturday, yep.
Do we see Barack Obama in Milwaukee or Michelle Obama in Milwaukee for an early vote rally to turn people out, especially the African-American community, which Dems will tell you they're not worried about winning Wisconsin. They're worried about the turnout. What's the margin going to be? They want to see a big turnout in Milwaukee and Dane counties. They want to see the Obama coalition come back and vote for Hillary Clinton and beat into those numbers. That's what they're worried about more than anything else.
Here's what I think. I think we see Hillary Clinton if Charles Franklin's numbers on Wednesday show that this race is tightening even more. Now, he'll be in the field prior to the second debate, which is Sunday night. But
absolutely. But she keeps Wisconsin kind of like in this holding pattern of,
yeah,
I can get there. Come in the last 2 weeks, do a couple big rallies, and then kind of put it away. Now, the question, though, is does Trump get his feet in this debate Sunday night? Does he, like, all of a sudden have a bounce out of that? his numbers are not going well right now nationally. When you watch the polling, remember that we see national polling reflect the trends first, then it kind of trickles down to the state, the battleground state. So we saw this week where it had been tight. He had the poor debate performance on that last Monday, and then Clinton started to bounce up. All right. Now we're seeing the battleground states show the same kind of pattern. Will we be 2 points, 3 points, or will there be a widening of the gap in that next poll? That'll tell us more about where we're going.
Okay, but now talk about the Democratic strategy in Wisconsin, because they brought back Bernie, and he did okay, but I don't think he hit any home runs in this speech.
Bernie Sanders is about goosing turnout in Dane County, the Madison media market. Trump has got issues with the wow counties, Waukesha, Ozaukee, Washington. Clinton has issues with kind of the Dane County media market, Madison media market. They felt the burn in the primary. They're all in for Bernie Sanders. She needs those folks to come in for her at a big number, because the key for Democrats in Wisconsin is not to necessarily which counties they win, but the margins.
Absolutely.
Drive turnout in Milwaukee County. Drive turnout in Dane County. You don't have to win the Green Bay market if you're a Democrat to win Wisconsin statewide. You have to hold down the GOP margin of victory. Scott Walker's been phenomenal at driving up the margin in Brown County in that area. He hits the upper 50s. If Dems keep Trump, and he's doing okay in the Green Bay market from what we've seen so far in polling, if they keep him to 51, 52%, that's good news for Democrats on election
night. Why, as we do this show, literally two blocks away, Feingolden and Elizabeth Warren. Why Elizabeth Warren?
Millennials.
Millennials?
Yeah. There's another group that the Obama coalition was very good turning out in 2012 and 2008. Clinton hasn't had the same fire with those folks. Sanders, about those kids as well. Get them jazzed up. Get them turned out. He went, there's a big university in Madison, big university in Green Bay. You know, Warren, same kind of thing. So drive those folks to the
then
polls.
Final question. Why Bill Clinton, Milwaukee on Saturday? Because Trump is in the Walworth County Fairgrounds?
Bill Clinton was referred to what? Our first African-American president, right?
Yes.
So he's got a certain connection with the African-American community. Milwaukee's an ideal place for him to go and jazz turnout. We've seen him there before. That's part of what we're seeing. Now, interesting, Donald Trump, where is he going? He's in Waukesha a week ago. He's in Walworth County
but
Saturday.
I think that is purely a Paul Ryan event.
Yes.
I mean, I think Paul Ryan said, Mr. Trump, you're right. I haven't appeared with you, so I'm having my annual fall fest at the Walworth County Fairgrounds. It's, what, 1:30 on Friday?
Mm-hmm.
And then
Saturday, yes.
Saturday, excuse me. Thank you. And Senator Johnson will be there, and the governor will be there, so it's going to be quite a roadshow. So then Bill Clinton comes in to offset that?
No. Trump has got a base problem. He's going to base counties. That's that's the thing about Donald Trump we got to remember about. He's doing well, from what we've been told, northern Wisconsin, western Wisconsin. But how many voters are there in Eagle River, Wisconsin, to offset Ward's in Milwaukee?
Okay.
How many voters are over in northwestern Wisconsin to offset the drag in the wow counties? Those are things that he has to worry about. He's got to drive turnout among the base. They have a chance.
Why Donald Trump Jr., a shooting range in Marathon County?
Northern Wisconsin, the Wausau area, they think they're doing well up there. They think they have a chance to cut. Now that's
Duffy's district voted overwhelmingly for Mr. Trump.
That's one area of the state where if you look at kind of the map, that Dems used to be doing all right in Wausau, Stevens Point, that kind of area. It's gotten worse for them over the last 10, 15 years. So they think there's an opportunity there for them.
Fascinating. Okay, stock report. Rising.
So Russ Feingold, we got finance numbers this week. Russ Feingold raised $5.2 million. Ron Johnson raised about $4 million.
Now, is that just this year?
Just in the third quarter.
Okay.
So that's July 1st through September 30th. Now, talking about three-legged stools, money, mm-hmm. one of them, ads, another of them, poll numbers, another. Russ Feingold's led in every single poll we've seen publicly released since he got in the race. He's outraised Ron Johnson in every single quarter we've seen since the race started. And now the NRSC, its independent expenditure arm, which is the Senate Republicans, like their main group to help out their candidates,
yeah.
dropped 2 weeks of TV for Ron Johnson.
Yeah.
Now, the 2 weeks of TV they dropped are not like a game-changer type media buy where Ron Johnson's going to find the money to offset that. But it sends a message for national Republicans of, we're not investing in this guy. We got other places to go. It doesn't help the perception for Johnson of that Feingold's the favorite. Now, Johnson's been touting that he had $5.2 million in the bank at the end of September. Feingold's not released his cash on hand number yet. They're saying, hey, we've got the resources to close this race. They say, we have the message and we're ready to go. But when I talk to people, they're like, there needs to be a game changer where now 4.5 weeks out, there needs to be a game changer for Johnson to change the dynamic of this race between now and Election Day.
Okay, Johnson, I want to be sure I have the numbers right. Johnson raised, Russ Feingold raised $5.2 million in the third quarter, July, August, September?
Yes.
What number did Senator Johnson
raise? $4
million. $4 million, okay.
And so overall, go back to spring of 15 when Feingold got in, he's raised like $20 million. Now, you know, if you go back to the beginning of 15, Johnson's raised $15 million. It just shows you that he's been a good fundraiser. Johnson's been a good fundraiser compared to other candidates in other states. Mm-hmm. They just trailed Feingold the entire time.
Okay, mixed.
So tuition freeze, we just, not that long ago, Board of Regents met. They want to do...
The meeting today.
Yes. They want to have a freeze in the first year of this next budget, but a small increase in the second, roughly the cost of inflation. Now, what's interesting about this is they're making the argument to lawmakers of, hey, we can work with you in the first year, but at some point, tuition has got to go up. You can't freeze it forever. Who do you want to raise tuition? Do you guys want to do it, Republicans in the Capitol, Governor Walker, or do you want us to do it? And we're showing you, by having a basically inflation-based raise in tuition, that we can be responsible.
We can be responsible.
Give us the power back.
Yep.
All right, let's end this and move forward. It'll be interesting to see how it flies in the Capitol. The governor has been committed the first year of that budget having a freeze. What happens in year two? That's the thing to watch.
That's a very good choice. Falling.
So, John Chisholm, we already talked about kind of the implication, the legacy of John Doe II in this decision Supreme Court. Let's talk about the politics.
He was just reelected.
John Chisholm just reelected, but he lost this bid to go to the Supreme Court, kind of revive. It's really the marquee case of his career. Conservatives are not going to forget what's going on. Now, what's interesting, Eric O'Keefe, an activist with the Club for Growth, has said, it's not over for me. Until John Chisholm is gone, it is not over for me. Now, what does he do? This fall, they put up a very flawed candidate, a Democratic primary, and couldn't beat him. He's a Democrat in a very Democratic county. So as long as he wins the primary, he's going to be okay. Do you think Dem primary voters are going to like turn against him because he did went after Governor Walker and conservatives? Probably not. So do they find a better candidate in 4 years? Can he keep that fire burning for 4 years?
No.
Probably not. Two, Chisholm and others, they've called for Governor Walker to remove Chisholm from office. O'Keefe and others called. That's probably not going to happen. Can you imagine Scott Walker removing John Chisholm from office, the political baggage that would cause for him? What you're more likely to see is that Eric O'Keefe and his friends have deep pockets. They've filed several lawsuits against Chisholm and his top co-lieutenants. They will keep coming after him again and again, saying, this is not over for us. We're going to make your life miserable. And, you know, that's an avenue they can go down. But this is, so even though the investigation is over, the fallout is not for John Chisholm.
And a P.S. on that, all of the documents and other materials that had been gathered, netted up as part of John Doe II, now have to be returned.
I've talked to a couple of the people who were targets or their lawyers. They said this week that they're going to ask a judge to have this stuff returned because they haven't got it back yet. What's interesting is Chisholm and company have got some of those documents because they're being sued by Cynthia Archer, former Walker aide who was caught up in John Doe I. They were given permission by federal court to hold on to it while they defend themselves in that case.
Yep.
So when's it all turned over, we'll see, but they're pushing to have that stuff returned at this moment.
Okay, let's look forward a little bit. Next week we get new Charles Franklin numbers, and Judge Peterson wants to know what the Wisconsin DMV is doing to be sure that accurate information is given.
And next Friday night, the first U.S. Senate debate, the 14th, I believe. No better night for debate than Friday night, right?
Right. And speaking of debates, you're going to watch the Packers and Giants, or are you going to watch Secretary Clinton and Mr.
I have
Trump?
A TV in my office and a TV in the family room in the basement. I'll keep them on both. How's that?
You can multitask.
Yes.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for October 7th.